Accession number 20363, Reel 2.
Tom Cattle, Reel 2.
Troop trains to go to Scotland. I remember we arrived at night in Glasgow and the train stopped and everyone was ordered to get out of the trains, and we went into a park where there were small sort of Nissen type shelters where we slept the night in these shelters, and the next morning we were transported on then to Greenock, where our original destination was, and where the troop ship was waiting. But on reaching Greenock, we found that the troop ship had had to, due to the air raid that had taken part the night before, when we'd been taken off the train, had to move from the side of the dock out into the main stream, out in the mid-channel of the river. And we were then taken out by lighters from the dockside and onto the ship in midstream. It was quite a large troop ship. It seemed to be full by the time we got on board. The name of the boat was the SS Moultan, Moultan. And as far as I could understand, the seamen on board were mainly Lascars. Anyway, we settled in on the mess decks where we were issued with hammocks and a couple of blankets, and we were, of course, assigned to this mess deck, which we kept for the journey that we were going to take. We weren't at all sure where we were going to, but we had an inkling that it might be the Far East, because, of course, we had been issued with these ridiculous topi hats that they issued at the time for people that were going to the Far East. Anyway, we set sail the next day because the ship was full. We sailed out into the sea, and I suppose it must have been the, thinking back, it must have been the out into the Atlantic Ocean, because we there joined up with a large number of other ships, which obviously were going in convoy to whatever place we were destined for. Anyway, we set sail in this convoy, and of course we had no idea where we were going, and it was just a matter of settling in. It was quite rough. And we knew that we were sailing southwards or southwestwards, and the sea was quite rough. And of course, a lot of us, I suppose, I'd never been on a big boat before, as I suppose none of the others had, I wasn't sick at all, but. Quite a lot of them were, and were unable to eat for a few days. And anyway, we had some alarms we had to keep quiet and not bang about, and because there were submarines, it was given out over the Tannoy when they were in the area. And anyway, we kept sailing, and eventually. We went through the Bay of Biscay, which was very, very rough. And, of course, the sickness continued on board, and it was quite messy, as you can understand, with a few thousand troops on a ship. And the food wasn't too good, But however, we got through the Bay of Biscay, and I can remember then they said, well, we're going through the most difficult part now, and it was given out that we were the second convoy to try to get through the Mediterranean. The first convoy apparently had been literally destroyed, and we were the second one to attempt the journey through the Mediterranean to get down through the Suez Canal rather than right the way down around South Africa to try and save time. Anyway, it was a little bit hairy because we had numerous warnings of submarines and aircraft, which after passing through Gibraltar, we didn't see any lights at all, and I can't remember seeing any land until we got down to a point where they said you can see some lights on one side of the boat, and that was the island of Pantelleria, and that's the only place that I can remember in the Mediterranean. However, there two or three of our ships were sunk in the convoy, and it was a little bit scary because we were down and underneath and battened down. You know, we weren't allowed to come up on deck at set certain times and for training. And you know, I used to lie there sometimes and think, my goodness, there's only a few inches of steel between us and the outside sea. And but however, you didn't have to dwell too much on it and think too much about it. And eventually we got to Port Said, and by this time the weather had changed and it was really hot, and every few minutes that you could get up on the deck, you got up there. Of course, we anchored off Port Said to take on water and what have you, and of course we were surrounded immediately. I mean, it's quite an experience, by the what they call bum boats. It was a little boat that was crewed by one man who had oars, and he brought out all these leather handbags, purses, and all sorts of things for sale to the troops. But of course, the troop ship we were up here, and the little boat was down there, and he had to throw his line up, and he would then put the handbag or whatever it was in a little woven basket, and you would pull it up, and he would tell you how much. He would shout up how much he wanted you to put in the basket for the, and of course, a lot of the things. I mean, he didn't get paid for it. It was taken out of the basket, and the poor chap never had any money for it. But however, I suppose he made some money out of it. But there was any amount of these boats, and of course, there was the kiddies who were asking for people to throw money into the sea so that they could dive in and get at these sort of things that happen, I understand, in the eastern countries. Anyway, we weren't there long before we started to move off and had to take our turn, of course, to go down through the Suez Canal. This was quite an experience. I mean, I don't suppose any of us had ever been abroad, perhaps before, on a boat like that. And it was quite an experience. Anyway, our next port of call was Aden, which we weren't allowed ashore. We stayed on board. We anchored there for a few hours. I wasn't very impressed with Aden at all. It all looked so red. The sand and the hills and everywhere looked red, I can remember. Anyway, we eventually... I should imagine it took us somewhere like 3 weeks or a month, and before we docked in Bombay. We were certainly glad to get off that boat because it was very, very hot now. And as I say, we were glad to get on land again, and we moved into, I got no idea, it was Deal Alley. I think everyone that went abroad went to Deal Alley. Everyone knows where that is, not far out from Bombay, and the transit camps were there. It would appear that we were reinforcements for different battalions in India, and we had gone out in groups, and we went to this reinforcement camp where we were all split up, and we were all sent off then to different regiments. Some of the chappies that I had joined up were still with me, and some weren't. We were going to the Dorset Regiment, the 2nd Battalion Dorset Regiment, who had been in India since 1942 and had been training there since that time. This was late 1943. As I say, my draft were going to the Dorset Regiment, some were going to the Welsh Regiment, and some were going to the South Wales Borders, and many more to other different regiments, but that's the three that I can remember. Anyway, we set off, my group, to join the Dorset Regiment, and it was a place, we joined them at a place called Galunchi, or Vizapur. It was a tented camp, and the regiment had only just, or at least they were moving in there. The battalion was on a scheme at a place called Carrick Vazla. I think they were doing combined ops training because the 2nd Division, who the 2nd Dorsets were a part of, the 2nd British Infantry Division, were training as an amphibious division and were to make amphibious landings in different parts of Burma or the Pacific. When we arrived at this camp, the advance party were getting it ready for when the battalion came back from their exercise, and we joined them and had to help to put up tents and what have you. It was all tented. I can remember that our billets in India were always tented. We were never in a barracks. We were always in tents, mainly bell tents. And wherever we moved, we were always in tents. Anyway, we joined the battalion. They came back within a few days, and of course we were then consumed into the battalion and as reinforcements, and we continued training with the battalion. I can remember that it wasn't long after when we went to Bombay and went on another troop ship, and we pulled out into the sea, Arabian Sea, I think it must have been there, they call that, and we did amphibious training. We had scrambling nets down the side of the troop ship, and landing craft came in, and we went down the nets into the craft, and they pulled away and circled round, ready to make a landing, a practice landing. And this continued. It was rather difficult, you know, if you'd never been on a scrambling net before, it's a little bit difficult with the swell. If you didn't jump at the right time, then you could find yourself jumping off and hitting the bottom of the boat when it was on the down, rather than when it was on the up. and you had to work it so that you jumped from the scrambling net into the boat when it was on the up. Anyway, it was all training, and as I say, to all intents and purposes, the second division were to be used as an amphibious division. After that, of course, it was exercises, route marching all across the countryside of India. And then we had a period of time where we did jungle training, which we went to the south of India in 5 tonners, I suppose they called them, I can't remember. They were big vehicles that transported us down into the jungle, which was at Belgaum in southern India, and it was thick jungle. And of course we then started to think, you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to make amphibious landings? Are we going into the jungle? What are we going to do? No one seemed to know what we were going to do. I mean, we knew that the Japanese were pushing our troops out of Burma. They'd been retreating for some time, and they were in the Arakan, the Japanese, and they were getting mighty close to the Indian border. And we more or less had a good idea that this is where we were going to be sent very shortly. Anyway, we had rather intensive training at one period in Belgaum. And then we went back to, I can't remember what camp, whether we'd moved another. We moved around so much to different camps in India that it was a job to remember exactly where you were. But anyway, it wasn't long before we were back down to Belgaum again.
Did you ever come across any political disturbances in India?
Yes, there were some at I can remember at Nasik City, and of course they wanted us out of India. Really, they didn't want the British in India. This was a time of unrest, and Gandhi, I think it was Gandhi then that was the main instigator of all the trouble. And this Nasik City was one of the areas that I can remember where there was trouble, and we had to go there and try and get order restored there, because they were causing so much trouble.
What did you see of the disturbances?
Well, it was mainly demonstrations of large numbers of people, of Indian people.
Was there any violence?
Oh yes, there was violence, but we didn't go in to try and settle it. We merely remained on the outskirts in case we were needed, but we didn't get involved. I don't know whether Indian troops were involved or not, but of course the British troops. You see, we were in a rather difficult position, because as I understood that we weren't welcome in India, the British, and the British troops there were so expensive to maintain that they had to be maintained, I suppose, by the Indian government, because we were there on their behalf, supposedly, and of course they objected most strongly to a British division being in the in India, because it was so expensive to maintain. However,
did you come across any hostility to you personally?
Not personally, because we were the only time we went into a town really was when we went on leave, and that wasn't very often. We didn't get very much leave at all. Bombay or Secunderabad or Calcutta there was a hill, Darjeeling, that some of the chaps used to go to on leave. But as I say, we were on intensive training, and leave really was not a priority.
Did you feel at all uneasy when you went on leave?
No, not at all. No. It was a most enjoyable time. How do you enjoy yourself in a foreign country? By going to the pictures. Mainly, I think, drinking in hotels and what have you, or YMCAs as they were called, and places like that. Going to the cinema or just strolling around the towns. Quite a lot of the chaps, of course, used to go into the red light districts where they shouldn't go, but it wasn't worth the trouble, really, because the red caps used to pay it a great deal of attention, and if you were caught in these out of bounds area, then you were arrested and put on a charge, and it was never worth the trouble. I can remember from the outset of my army training, I was determined that I was never going to walk into trouble if I could help it. I'd seen so much of the younger chaps that were a little bit troublesome and perhaps a little bit lazy, and put on a charge, and they had to suffer for it. They were marching around first thing in the morning at reveille in full service marching order as punishment, and that never appealed to me, really, because once you got on jankers, as they called it, you were never free of it. You were always on it, because when you were on parade, they used to, the orderly officer, the orderly corporal, whoever it was, on inspection, would always find something wrong with your equipment or rifle or something, and you'd be on another charge. So you once you got on jankers, you had a job to get on. And so I was determined never to get into trouble if I could help it. and thankfully, never did. I came close to it, I must admit, once or twice, but that's by the way. But I was never on a charge or in trouble in the army.
How did you come close to it?
Well, it was after we came out of Burma, we went on leave, and of course, we'd been so restricted and hadn't had any leave or freedom, perhaps you call it, for such a long time that I think when we went on leave in Calcutta at that time, everyone went a little bit mad. And I can remember we went to a dinner dance in a big hotel, and at the rear of this, it was a Great Eastern Hotel in Calcutta, and at the rear of this hotel they had a huge grassed area where you could sit out and drink, and they had a boarded area and a bandstand, and they employed a band, and you could dance there and whilst you drank, and it was perhaps a little bit like a cabaret as well. This dance band played, and anyway, we decided to go to this place one night, and of course you could buy drink cheaper outside than I suppose it cost you three times as much in a hotel to buy drink than it did outside in the shops. And of course, what happened, we bought our drink outside, which was mainly gin as I remember it, and took these bottles of gin in to drink into the hotel. And of course, everyone had too much to drink, and there was a mixture of Scots and British, Welsh, and all sorts of individuals there. And of course, it wasn't long before arguments started and fighting started, and of course the red caps came in, and they were grabbing whoever they could, you know. And I can remember they tried to grab me, and I ran off and ran into the hotel, and they chased me all through the hotel, right the way through. And but I managed to escape and was never caught. But that was my only brush with the authorities at that time. But it was just people. They just went mad, really. You could see squaddies in the streets, and they would engage what they called a gharriwala, which was a man who had a couple of horses and was drawing a carriage, which were more or less taxis, used as taxis. And four or five of the chaps would get in this gharri, and one of them would sit up with the driver, and he'd get the horses going, and then he'd push the gharri driver off of the carriage and take the reins, and then he'd have a race through the town. It was a bit, I suppose it's a bit naughty, really, but it seemed rather hilarious at the time. But there we are. There's quite a lot of people that got into trouble at that period of time. Anyway, I've gone on a little bit, but we missed quite a bit out, because this happened after we were pulled out of Burma. We haven't got into Burma yet.
Let's go back to where we left off. You were talking about jungle training at Belgaum and the standby duty at Nasik.
That's right. Well, eventually, whilst we were on the second trip in Belgaum, everything seemed to go mad. We obviously had been ordered to get up to the front line at Manipur state, which is on the borders of India, because the Japanese were threatening to come through, break through into India. And our troops had retreated all the way back through, and now we're trying to make a stand in Manipur state, somewhere around Imphal, Kohima area. However, we were moving more or less on a minute's notice. We had to a place called Kirki was mentioned, where we had to get ammunition and all sorts of vehicles and what have you, guns. The division had to be armoured up and to proceed up to Manipur. Actually, it was a place called Dimapur, which was the main base, as I remember, of the British at the time. And this is where we were ordered to go to. I suppose it must have been, from where we were up to the front line, was about 2,000 miles across India, from southern India right across to the northeast of India. And it was quite a long drive. As you can appreciate, the roads in India weren't like the roads in England. A lot of them were mainly dry track, muddy roads. And at this time of the year, it was dry and very, very dusty. Anyway, they asked for volunteers to go as a second driver for the motor platoon drivers. And my friend, who came from Corf and had joined originally the Dorset Regiment and had gone abroad with them in 1942, was a driver in motor platoon. And so he said, "Would you like to come as my second driver to take the trucks up to Manipur?" And I said, "Yes, I would, because I could drive." And anyway, I went as his second driver. And of course, all the motor platoon took all the battalion stores and what have you, and they were all new vehicles. and